Alright, so this is the next edition to the Tarantula Series podcast. This is Derek again. And for this podcast, what I'm going to be talking about is a unique subject. I don't believe there's really too much information in this subject yet, but I'm talking about it anyways because this is something that I would like for there to be more awareness of. And then probably pique some interest and hope that there will be some more work done in this specific area. And the specific area that I'm talking about is parasitism in tarantulas. So, like I said, this isn't really big in the hobby. And what I mean by that is there's not too many situations to where this is going to be a huge deal as long as you make sure to maintain a clean enclosure. That being said, when I'm talking about parasitism in tarantulas, I am not going to mention the obvious one that everyone knows, which is the tarantula hawk. And the reason why I'm not going to mention the tarantula hawk in this podcast is going to be because your tarantula hawks aren't going to show up in your enclosure and attack your tarantulas. That's more of in the wild, obviously. And yeah, I think that one's pretty well known. They go into the burrow, sting them, take them, and then use them for their eggs. That's about it. So, with that being said, like I said, I'm going to talk about parasitism in tarantulas, and I'm going to narrow it down to four. Yeah, I think four. One, two, three. It's going to be four different parasites, and they're going to be completely different. For example, I'm going to cover the nematode worms, mites, Megacellius scalaris. And the reason I'm going to cover Megacellius scalaris is to prove a point. And I'll talk about that point later. But the last one I'm going to talk about is a fungus called the Cordyceps ignotifungus. So I'm going to be covering worms, arachnids, as in mites, Megacellulus scalaris, which is fly, and the Cordyceps ignota fungus. So now I'll start with the nematode worms. So since science has yet to invent a topical treatment for parasites that affect tarantulas, and they do have those for the dogs and cats, parasitism is a problem with tarantulas. And it can be pretty sad if, say, you have a female tarantula that's supposed to live 20, 30 years, if it does well, for it to all of a sudden get a parasite and you notice it and you try to treat it, but there is no treatment for it. And that leads to a sad situation between you and that female tarantula that was going to have a tremendous long living life, but now can't due to there being no treatment available. So, going back to this, the nematodes are internal parasites or endoparasitoids. They are going to render tarantulas unable to eat and also make them very sick. So some symptoms of nematode invasion or signs too include unusual activities such as restlessness. And I know that when mature male tarantulas become mature male tarantulas, they act a little restless, but I'm guessing it's not to this extent. They're also going to be spinning a lot of silk, and another symptom or sign is going to be a refusal to leave the water dish or eat any prey. And one of the signs that you can smell is there's supposed to be a sweet odor that occurs in the habitat, and also a white and gummy substance near the tarantula's mouth. And from doing some research, I discovered that as of 2012, there is no treatment for the nematodes. And you'd think that there'd be some form of treatment, some more knowledge for an animal that's been alive since before the dinosaurs. But this is according to the Research Institute for Exotic Species Microbiology. They're the ones that are supposedly working on it, but it's 2020, so I'm not so sure. So Yes, those were the symptoms. And another symptom is that for some reason, the chelicerae are going to become paralyzed. And when the chelicerae become paralyzed, it's going to make it impossible for the tarantulas to clean themselves from substrate, to clean themselves from anything for that matter. And it's going to make feeding impossible. Since they can't move their chelicerae, they can't move their fangs, they can't consume any food. And yes, even though tarantulas do have a long metabolism, this is still going to impact them drastically due to the other things that those nematodes are doing. So a quick test that you can do is to shake the spider's container. And under normal circumstances, the spider is going to, of course, balance and react to this. And if the tarantula is infected, one of the signs could be that it does not react. It won't be able to react to that, and it just won't. So, yes. Another way to see, and this way is not the 100% way, but you can also try feeding the spider. And if they're infected, then they cannot attack the prey. So if you really have a big suspicion that your tarantula may be infected, then you could try to feed the tarantula and see if it's eating. If it eats, then there's a pretty good chance that it's not infected. If it doesn't eat, then there's a good chance that it is infected. But this all has to do with adding these symptoms together, because of course, tarantulas, even if they've gone for about a week or two, or even a month sometimes, if they don't want to eat, they're just not going to eat. So that's just how it is. So you're going to have to add these symptoms up together. You can't just say, oh, he has one symptom, so therefore there must be parasites. And I believe that pictures work wonders. So if you're more interested in the nematode worms, what you should do is go on Google and look up the nematode worms infection on tarantulas, and you'll be able to see what I'm talking about there. And now for mites. So mites, they can be a problem if you're not careful about the humidity and the moisture in tarantula housing. And there aren't actually many symptoms, but you will be seeing them around the spider's mouth, the prosoma, the legs, around the enclosure. And yeah, the easiest way to treat this is by getting a cotton swab, putting some petroleum jelly on there, and then you're going to touch the mites with the swab. The mites will stick to the swab, and that's how you get them removed. So mites will be present in hot and humid environments. So typical tarantula setups, you can possibly expect mites, and it's not necessarily a huge problem, but there will be a problem if you see a lot of mites. If you see like an infestation of mites, and that's a definite problem. So ways to keep the mite number down include good ventilation and good cage maintenance. And what good cage maintenance means is if there's carcasses, there are leftover worms or crickets that are in that enclosure that the tarantula is not eating or have died, it is highly recommended that you take those out, because those serve as food for mites and other animals that would like to go into that tarantula enclosure. So yes, you definitely want to discard prey remains. They should be removed as soon as possible in order to obviously prevent buildup. And also, an important thing to note is that egg sacs can fall victim to these mites. So you have to be extra vigilant during this time when you have the mites near an egg sac, because they'll penetrate the egg sac, they will infest it, and that could be bad news for those slings that have yet to hatch. So mites will also gather around the mouth of a tarantula when the area is too humid. So drying out the cage for several days is recommended. So the way to balance required humidity and good ventilation, those are the two keys to preventing mites from infesting your tarantula enclosures. So spray the tarantula cages regularly and allow it to dry out between. So yes, you also want to be careful with extra humidity during pre-molt, because that could possibly lead to some complications. So yes, mites may be unavoidable depending on where you live. So it's just important to always monitor your tarantula enclosure and make sure that you're doing your part to make sure that that enclosure is clean for the tarantula. That way you can avoid not just mites, but other parasites that can do more damage. So yes, mites are actually arachnids. Other arachnids include mites, tarantulas, spiders, of course, and scorpions. And that is a topic for another podcast, where I will discuss the difference between, or what makes an arachnid, the differences between true spiders, tarantulas, mites, and of course, scorpions. Yes. So the next part is, or the next parasite that I'll be talking about, is the Megacellula scalaris. So with the Megacellula scalaris, this is more of a story type of thing than a real talk about it being a true parasite, because really this is not one that you're going to have to worry about too much. So yes. One second. So, Megacellula scalaris. These are facultative predators and parasites. They can lay up to 600 eggs. And since their usual diet consists of remains, they could easily be attracted to the prey remains and previous molts that tarantulas have in their burrow. And this is typically in the wild. So what's hypothesized is that these flies penetrate inside of the tarantula through the book lungs, which are on the ventral portion of the opisthosoma. And yes, so this is a situation where there are very few reports of this happening. In fact, this report happens to go over the Tillicotyl vagans tarantula, or the Mexican red rump tarantula. And yes, so I'm contributing this research that I found. This is from the Journal of Arachnology and the American Arachnological Society. And it is volume 43, number 1, made in 2015, page 115, 116, and 117, Holding Institution, Smithsonian Library, sponsored by the Biodiversity Heritage Library. This is where I'm getting this information from. The tarantula that was impacted was the Mexican red rump tarantula, as previously mentioned, so also known as the Tillicotyl vagans. So my pronunciation may not be agreeable, and that's because I'm just not too good with these pronouncing these scientific names. But an important thing to note, if you want to get into the scientific names, is that I've heard that it doesn't matter really how much you pronounce it, but that you can spell the names well. And also, of course, remember that the genus name is capitalized and the species name is not capitalized. So the Megacellula scalaris was discovered to be a parasite, which is actually a parasitoid And what that means is that it begins its parasitic life cycle in the first instar. So this conclusion was acquired through the determination of species with DNA barcoding. So what happened was this tarantula was infected, and after being monitored, it had passed. So what happened was they went to check and see why this tarantula passed, and there were Megacellulus scolaris eggs, first instar, I believe second and third instar may have been present in the tarantula, but that is how it was paralyzed, through being having the eggs planted into the tarantula, penetration through both lungs, and that's what happened. They laid their eggs in the tarantula, and I believe that that's similar to the tarantula hawk, minus the famous part where the tarantula hawk guides the tarantula over to a new place where it's going to go and lay its eggs. So the last one that I'm going to be talking about is the Cordyceps ignota fungus. So this is actually what I'm talking about, is a fungus. So it differs from mites, worms, and Megacellulus scolaris, so flies, in the fact that it is not an animal. It is, yeah, I'm pretty sure it's not an animal. Yeah. Simple things like these, I question, even though I really should, and I'm a bio major, about to have a bachelor's, but some tiny things like this, I think, is that true? Should be. I'm not going to look it up. No one really cares. So these spores, they're plants, I think. Sure. So the spores of Cordyceps ignota burrow into the body of a tarantula. They start to grow, branch throughout the spider, and eventually they kill the spider through this process. So once the fungus has completely taken over, these fruiting bodies, which are extensions and buds, they're going to burst through the exoskeleton and release spores to complete the cycle. So these spores, they will come off, and these will be the new Cordyceps ignota fungus. It is the reproduction of those. So when a Cordyceps fungus attacks a host, their mycelium invades and replaces the host's tissue. So they actually take it over completely. Now, what this reminds me of is the Flood in Halo. That's a good reference. Maybe, maybe not. Depends on if you've ever played Halo, though. So yes, these elongated fruiting bodies, also known as ascocarps, are cylindrical. They can be branched or of a complex shape that is like that. Yes. And yes, so one unique fact that I want to include in this is that tarantulas, or spiders for that matter, and this fungus have one thing in common, which is that they both have chitin. Chitin is usually used as a protective or outer layer to protect the organisms from the environment. Tarantulas have it, fungi have it. So now, an ascus, which is the... Alright, so the ascocarp bears many small, flat-shaped parithica containing asci. These contain thread-like ascospores, which will break into fragments and become infected. An ascus is a sexual spore-bearing cell produced in the Ascomycete fungi. And so what I'm saying here is that that this fungi is part of the, so the Cordyceps ignata is part of the largest phylum of fungi with over 64,000 species. And this phylum has a defining feature, which is the ascus, a microscopic sexual structure then in which non-motile spores called ascospores are formed. Currently, there's little information that can be found over the treatment for this parasite, and I don't believe that any research will be conducted in the near future over this, although that could be the case. It is recommended, however, that one takes caution on what they feed their tarantula and the substrate that they use. Certain substrates may be more prone to growing fungi, not necessarily the Cordyceps ignata fungus, but fungi in general. So, of course, you don't want that in your enclosure. You want to make sure that the substrate you're using, the moisture you're providing, is not prone to spores or fungi. And along with that, you don't want to be using unclean instruments. And the reason for that is because unclean instruments could also be possible locations for many kinds of parasites and or their eggs to reside. So, and this doesn't just go for tools. This goes for anything that you're introducing to their enclosure. And yes, so a little story that has to do somewhat with tarantulas, but also not, is from what I've learned from fish keeping. I used to do some fish keeping, and from that I learned that not to hand feed your fish, you know, to touch the fish. Like the betta fish is pretty interactive and you can have fun with that, but it's important not to touch them. And the reason you don't touch them is because you can actually you can give infections or diseases to those fish through touching them. And I believe that this concept can be implemented into tarantulas too. So if you are going to handle a tarantula, I suggest that you wash your hands and make sure they're clean. You do not want to transfer anything just from handling your tarantula that will result in its life being shortened. Yeah, so that was pretty much parasites for tarantulas, the Parasitism podcast, all the material that I wanted to throw out today. And an update on my tarantulas right now. I rehoused my Nadir chromatis. My Tylocotyl albopilosum is doing just fine. And I have three new tarantulas coming in. This is the Heteroscodra maculata, which is an African Old World tarantula. I have the Pteranoculus murinus, which is an OBT, so orange bitey thing, or the orange baboon tarantula, which is another Old World species from Africa. And even though the Heteroscodra maculata has a nickname of the Togo starburst baboon tarantula, it is not of the same genus as the orange baboon tarantula. As I previously mentioned, the orange baboon tarantula is a Pteranoculus murinus. And then the third tarantula that I'm going to be getting is the Aphanopelma chalcodes. I don't know how to say it. Maybe I'm saying it right, maybe I'm not, but it is also known as the desert blonde tarantula. They're all coming in as slings. And I have my arboreal enclosure ready for that Heteroscodra maculata. And I'm looking forward to having a lot of fun with that, especially since I know that these old worlds are more aggressive and they're considered a species that should be kept for the advanced keepers. Definitely not one you want to start out with as a beginner. I mean, of course you could, but they're a little more aggressive than, say, the curly-haired tarantula. So, yeah, that was it. Thank you for listening, if you listened this far. And hopefully this is some interesting information and that you'll tune in again. Thank you very much.